get so nervous before I have to speak. And then when I'm done, I feel relieved. So all day, you know, my thoughts have been racing, and I kept feeling like I wasn't ready, and I kept going in the bathroom to pray. And, you know, and then I said a prayer with some friends, and they said, just have fun. You know, just go up there and have fun and say what you need to say. I was asked to speak on sponsorship, a two-way street, and that definitely is big in my life because I'm from a very small area. I'm from Bedford, and there's every woman that comes in the door basically asks me to be their sponsor because there's not that many women that have clean time yet in our area, although it's getting better and it's getting bigger. But the meetings started in Bedford 5.5 years ago, a little bit over 5.5 years ago. When I first moved to Bedford, there were no NA meetings up there. And I was from Pittsburgh, where there was meetings all the time, and I could get meetings on a regular basis. And I did the geographical change. I had 7 years clean and relapsed in Pittsburgh and thought if I moved to a different area where I didn't know anybody and nobody knew me, you know, that I could start over again. And, you know, I was, when I relapsed, it was really hard for me to go back in the rooms and pick up a 24-hour key tag. So I chose the easy way out and I moved. And I went to rehab at Twin Lakes, which introduced me to the area, and, you know, met someone that said I could bring my kids up until I found a place. And that's what I did. That's how I ended up in the area. And when I was in Pittsburgh, I was sponsoring a lot of people too, and when I relapsed, I didn't tell people I relapsed. I was out there using. I was drug and alcohol therapist working at St. Francis Hospital. I had so many commitments, so many sponsees, and it was like Lynn can't relapse. You know, it was like too many people were dependent on me, and my pride especially. I could not go in and say I used. And you know, and it was progressive. I was stayed with my husband, who was in and out of the rooms constantly, consistently, and in and out of jail. And I kept taking him back, thinking, you know, that if I stayed clean, he'd eventually get clean and stay clean. And if I had another baby, he'd stay clean. Well, none of those things worked. And everybody kept saying, it's going to be a matter of time. You're going to pick up if you stay with this man. And I didn't want to hear that. I thought, you know, I was different and that I could do it my way and that I was strong. And I had all recovery in my life, work, and, you know, my whole life was about addiction in one form or another, using and not using, and thought that that I wasn't going to relapse. I didn't think that I was going to relapse. And I had a C-section with my son, my second child. I had two kids in recovery, and got introduced to narcotics, and it was a whole different ball game. Because when I got clean the first time, it was cocaine, alcohol, weed, all that, but I had never done the narcotic route. And when I relapsed, it was like it started out slow. It started out in the hospital getting narcotics, and it woke my addiction right up. My life was stressful. I had to go back to work 6 weeks after I had the baby. I had a C-section and had complications and was on was in the hospital getting Demerol every 4 hours for 2.5 weeks because I ended up with endometriosis, which is very painful. And I had 7 years clean. And here I am calling the nurse, looking at the clock, waiting for the time to get my next shot, and got discharged with Percocets. And that just started snowballing. It was, okay, I got migraines. I got to get something for this. I got to get something for that. And kept saying I was clean, going to meetings, you know, sharing like I was clean, and was telling myself I was clean because I was getting prescription meds. Instead of taking one every 4 hours, though, I was taking four every hour, practically. And it got to the point where I was buying stuff on the street, and my husband came home one day and was like, Lynn, and said, you're going to ruin your liver with all that Tylenol. Just use a bag of this, and gave me a bag of heroin. And said, you know, all you have to do is use one of these a day and you'll be fine. And that just took me to the races. And within 6 months, I was up to 20 bags of heroin a day. I was trying to work full-time as a drug and alcohol therapist. I was doing intakes, nodding out. My writing on my paper was like this. And but I thought nobody knew I was using. And I was going to meetings high. I was going to meetings saying I was clean. I was still sponsoring people. I was taking care of my children. working full time, and I thought, you know, this isn't a problem. I'm still functioning. Everybody around me knew what was going on, but I couldn't admit to what was going on. But like I said, it took me to my knees pretty quick. My husband got a settlement for $18,000, and, you know, we planned on doing all this stuff with this money, and we ended up in 3 weeks shot $18,000 worth of heroin. I didn't even take my kids to get a haircut or a new outfit or a pair of shoes, nothing. And all of that money went straight into my arm. So that was a new bottom for me and a different bottom for me. And like I said, I couldn't face people in the rooms. I just felt like there was one girl that was upset with me because I relapsed and I was her sponsor and I wasn't supposed to use. And I thought that's how everybody felt. There was, you know, one girl that was angry, but I focused on her. And, like, everybody hates me. Everybody thinks I'm a, you know, well, I was. It was like living this lie, this double life. And no one's going to ever trust me again. No one's going to ever want to be around me again. I felt like dirt because I was trying to live two different lifestyles. It was like, you know, by day I was, you know, going to work, and at night I was out stealing pickup trucks and shooting drugs and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And I finally went to detox. By the time I got to detox, I had to be carried into detox, and there was no protein left in my body. I didn't eat probably for 2 weeks, almost died. My husband dropped me off at Gateway, and I was supposed to be there a week before, but I, of course, had to wait till there was no money left, not one penny left, before I went in. And, you know, my job said as long as you follow what's recommended, you know, you'll still have your job. But I was like one of the hardest patients to treat. When you're a therapist and someone's trying to tell you what to do, Well, I had all the answers. I said, I know what I have to do, you know, and I had all the answers, of course, and I didn't want to hear what they were telling me because that's what I taught, and I knew all that. And so I didn't remain teachable at all. When I relapsed, it was like everything went in one ear and not the other, and I wasn't listening to what anybody was saying because I knew everything. And if I knew everything, I wouldn't have been in the position I was in. So, like I said, I did the geographical cure, and that didn't last too long. I went through rehab. I didn't go back to heroin because I moved to the boonies where I didn't know anybody. But there was doctors in Bedford that prescribed drugs, and I started doing that scene again. And I drank a few times, too. And, I mean, my kids have not seen me use that much. Most of my life, since 1990, I've been clean, except for 3 years of the relapse trying to get back into the rooms. And so my kids didn't see a whole lot. But what they saw the few times that I did get drunk or get really out there was really scary for them. I was the type of person that when I drank too much, I wanted to hurt people and hurt myself. And I did some pretty crazy things in front of my kids. And I did some crazy things in my addiction in Pittsburgh, too. It was like I always valued that I was a good mother, and I was taking my kids down the north side on the set. You know, I had a gun pulled to my head, you know, and had the money in the diaper bag and had that ripped out of my arm. My kids are in the car. I get out and start fighting a guy that had a gun to my head. You know, I'm sure my kids were traumatized. But I was in so much denial, it was like I didn't think that I still thought I was a good mother because I never lost my kids. CYS never got my kids, so it was like I was a good mother. And I was working still, and so I was still being productive. So, like I said, I moved up here, and there was no NA, and I tried the other fellowship, and felt like I couldn't be totally honest and felt different than. I could relate a lot to the people in the other fellowship, but I didn't feel like I could share as much that I needed to. And I could not find a sponsor. I had trouble finding a sponsor because there's almost all men in Bedford at those meetings. So I finally, me and a couple other guys got together and started the first NA meeting in Bedford. Someone had tried to get it to work before, and it didn't work, but we found the box and started again. And every Wednesday night, come hell or high water, you know, I went to that meeting and sat there and waited for people to come. And, you know, and it took a while. It took a couple of years. And, You know, now we went from one meeting to we have three meetings in our area a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You know, we usually have about 20 people that come to our meetings, sometimes more, sometimes 30. And this is a small town, and it saved my life. Service work and being a sponsor and reaching out to the newcomer has kept me clean. And you know, they say sponsorship's a two-way street. I could not have stayed clean. I've been clean since November 14th of 2001. I got my years mixed up. 2001, and I could not have done it without all the women that have come and gone in my life. And you know, a lot of times I get stressed out, and I'm like, I have too many, you know, I'm sponsoring too many people, I'm doing too much. But by me going and making sure that the meetings are open, and by being there for other people, and in return, they have been there for me too. That's why the topic's, you know, sponsorship's a two-way street. If I didn't have these women in my life that were coming into the rooms and showing me the pain that was still out there and, you know, what was out there for me, I don't think I would have been able to get clean. And some of the women in my life have helped me tremendously. I get into jams all the time. I'm a single mom with three kids. I'm involved in, well, I heard the main speaker last night saying you shouldn't have more than one home group, but I have three home groups, and I have positions in all three of them, and I have my hands in everything, and have the key to open up the meeting, and I still have that fear that, like, if I let go, it's not going to happen, like, I'm really important, like, I have to keep doing this, but it's helping me stay clean. It helps me stay clean, and there are girls that I'm sponsoring. One girl has 3 years, another one has 2 years, you know, another one just had a year, so it's not like people are just coming and going, but it's been a long 5 years. There's been many people that have come and gone. Many people have died because of this disease, and sponsorship for me has been the main thing in my life that keeps me going. I'm not working right now. I'm starting a new job on Tuesday. I'm going back to work. I haven't worked since I had my youngest daughter, who's 6. And, you know, before, my life was work, take care of the kids, go to meetings, and I've had a lot more time without working full-time. So my whole life has been NA for the past 5.5 years, and I'm just going to try to start back to work part-time and see, you know, if I can handle it, just take one step at a time. And, and it's been a while since I worked, so I'm nervous about that, too. I'm starting on Tuesday. But like I said, the girls in my life that I sponsor have really helped me. But there's been times where I've had to set boundaries. I have trouble saying no, a lot of trouble saying no to people. And it got to the point where I had to stop raising my hand saying I'd sponsor, you know, be a sponsor, because at certain points, I'd have 8 sponsees. Right now, I have, I think, 5 active sponsees. I've had to pull back and let go of a few just because I'm not any good to anybody else if I'm not taking care of myself. And I wasn't taking care of, I was starting to not take care of myself again. And that's what led up to my relapse that the last time was. Like, I was taking care of everybody else and not myself. And to be a sponsor, you have to be well. You know, if you're going to guide people in the steps and have people calling you every day to check in with you, to talk to you, let you know what's going on in their life, you have to be healthy yourself. And there's been a lot of times where I haven't been real healthy in recovery, and I've needed other people, and I've needed other women, and men are a big part of my recovery too, because of the small area that I'm from. I've needed people in my life, and I've had to have people tell me, listen, Lynn, you're doing too much. You're taking on too much. You know, recently I had myself so stressed out that, you know, I knew something had to change. I had to do something different because I was getting overwhelmed with everything that I was doing with my life. And it's always been really hard for me to set boundaries, but that's something that I'm trying to learn how to do, and I'm trying to say no, and I'm trying to hesitate before I jump in and say yes, I'll do that. You know, someone told me, hey, just pause and say, I'll get back to you. You know, don't just jump in and say yes every time. As a sponsor, when I sponsor someone, I ask them to call me every day, in the beginning and do 90 meetings in 90 days. And some people do and some people don't. And then working the steps is the most important thing. I think a sponsor, I know with my sponsor, she works my steps with me. She's there for me when I need to go over my steps or if I have any questions about anybody I'm sponsoring, I bounce it off of my sponsor. It's weird. My sponsor now, I was her sponsor back when I was clean the first time. I ran into her. She has 12 years clean now, and I was her sponsor her first 5 years in the program, and now she's my sponsor. So you never know when you're going to need somebody, you know. I never thought I'd be on the other side looking for someone to help me, but it happens. And I don't know. The program doesn't work without a we, and the program doesn't work without sponsorship. I've seen people come and go that come to meetings on a regular basis. They don't use, but they don't work any steps, and they don't get a sponsor. And those are the people that disappear and stop coming. They're the ones that don't make it. Some of the girls I sponsor, it's like pulling teeth to try to get them to do their steps. And you know, I can't make anybody do anything. I can only give suggestions and be there for people. But if it gets to the point where I'm suggesting, and people aren't doing anything to change anything, then sometimes I have asked people to move on. You know, maybe get a different sponsor. Maybe that someone else could help them better than I could. So. I don't know, I just keep coming back and I keep staying busy. I don't want to get back into the same thing I got into before, where I was taking care of everybody else and not myself, and I still tend to do that today. But I do have women that care about me that I sponsor, and my support group is mostly the people that I sponsor and people in Bedford. The small area of Bedford, and without them, I'd be lost. I came from a big city in Pittsburgh, where there was tons of people at any given time to go to a meeting and be with recovering people. But I can pick up my phone at any given time and call anybody in the program, and they're there for me. And that's because, I've built that circle, that support group for myself. A lot of people say the phone weighs 500 pounds, but they didn't have trouble calling the dealer or calling, whoever to borrow money or whatever. But to pick up and call your sponsor, some people just find that really hard. But working the steps and working with a sponsor will save your life. And, it's hard to understand why someone wouldn't do that. Because I know when I hit my bottom, I was willing to do anything it took to stay clean. If my sponsor would have told me to stand on my head 10 minutes a day to stay clean, I would have done it because I was in so much pain out there using that I didn't want to feel that pain anymore. I wanted Lynn back. I was a walking shell. There was nothing left inside of me. And not only did I give everything that I had inside of me to everybody else, I didn't take care of myself. Like I said before, I didn't take care of Lynn. And I'm trying not to make that same mistake again. And I do bounce things off of other people in my life on a regular basis. And my sponsor lives in Pittsburgh, so it's long distance. There isn't anybody in my area that I have found that could sponsor me, female-wise, in the program. So my sponsor lives in Pittsburgh, and I check in with her on a weekly basis. Sometimes it's less than that. It's every 2 weeks. But she helps me, look at things that I need to look at. And I also need her advice to help other sponsees. And she always keeps it simple and is like, you're not a sponsor to be everybody's best friend and be totally enmeshed in their life and, figure out all their problems and take care of them and make them feel better about themselves. You're there to help them with their steps and guide them in their recovery, not to be their best friend and not to hold their hand every step of the way. And I tend to get overly involved sometimes with my sponsees, but I got to remember that. But there were people here for me when I got here, and I always want to extend myself to the newcomer that walks through that door. And, you know, getting a sponsor right away is just so important, to have that one person that you know you can pick up the phone and call to help you in your recovery. It doesn't work without a sponsor, and it doesn't work if you don't work the steps. I'm really grateful to be here today, and that's about all I have.
I'd like to thank Lynn. I'd like to introduce our second speaker. Kyle, actually, I've heard speak before at an anniversary meeting, and we happen to have the same profession, so I don't know if we ever met each other on a job before, but we do. I do know him a little bit, I guess. more than I know Lynn, anyway. So I'd like to introduce the second speaker, Kyle.
I'm an addict named Kyle, and it's fucking hot. oh man, sponsorship. I was told when I first came around that all a sponsor does is show you how to work the steps. That's all he is a guide through the steps. Again, when I first come around, I had asked. The first person I had asked to be my sponsor had told me he couldn't handle being my sponsor because he couldn't handle me relapsing, so he turned me down. And of course, I showed him. I went out and got high. I went in and out a few times, and I always knew there was something here that I needed, that I wanted, that didn't exist in my life. You know, that was 1981 that I was first introduced to it. And like I said, I proved that man right by getting high just a few days after he turned me down. It was all his fault, though, just to let you know. I've since then learned a lot more about this program. But I never stopped coming here. I would use before, I would use after, I would, you know, play all the dumb games and think that you guys don't have a clue that I'm stoned out of my gourd, you know, and, you know, my drug of choice was quite obvious because I couldn't even sit still. You know, I'm walking on a ceiling, but nobody knows I'm under the influence. I ended up finding a bottom which consisted of what it says in our literature, you know, the homeless, jobless, dereliction, blah, 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 you know. Coming from the type of upbringing I was, this was not acceptable because I had lost all my rationalizations of, long as you have a socially accepted lifestyle, what you do in your own time is your business. So finally hitting this bottom, I was living in a tent in the woods and thought I was better than everyone else because, you know, street people don't have tents. I'm better than. Let's remember that. You know, I ended up going to what's called the bubble. The double bubble back in, this was back in 86, and I relapsed a couple times after that. but in March of 87, I had walked in, I had about a month clean. I asked the guy who is still today my sponsor to be my sponsor. And the reason I did is because, like I said, this was my first trip to the bubble. And he walked up front like this, tapped on the microphone. There were 300 plus people every Wednesday at this meeting. at that time. And when he tapped on that microphone and spoke into it, the room got quiet. I realized he must be the president of NA. And they say, find a person that has what you want. I want to be God. He's as close as I can get. I want what he has, the power and control over everyone here. So I asked him to be my sponsor. It didn't work out quite the way I expected because he's extremely humble. And I remember having arguments with him, telling him that he needs to like grow some balls and, you know, and stand up and fight and all this kind of stuff. And he's telling me to calm down and quit being so abrasive and quit being so obnoxious. Just sit down, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. Now, these were what was said all the time, but keep coming back. I was, my first experience with steps was with a gentleman by the name of Roy, and Roy had decided he was going to show me the way he learned the steps the first time. Roy has since gone, but Roy asked me some simple questions like, you know, do you believe you have a problem? Yeah. Does it cause dysfunction in your life, creating a powerlessness and an uncontrollable lifestyle? Yes. You know, I agreed to this. He says, do you believe in a power out there, some entity, something that can help you? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I do. Are you willing to ask him for help? I said, no. He said, well, I can't help you then. And he walked away. That was how the steps were done way back. Now, again, in 1987... I'm going to be serious about this. I relapsed on alcohol of all drugs. I hate that drug. Could never figure out who invented this horrible drug that makes you fall down, throw up, wreck your car, and wake up with a headache. When you got all these other drugs to choose from, why would you pick that one? But I did. And still to this day, I don't remember picking up the first, second, or last drink. I woke up in my yard knowing, you know the feeling, when you woke up at 4 in the morning and you're just, oh, I knew I had drank till I passed out. And I realized that as an addict, because that's what I heard in these rooms, I'm an addict. I'm not an alcoholic up until that point. And I understood what our steps said about alcohol is a drug, because it grabbed me without me even knowing it, and I never liked it even. That's what floored me. You know, I remember saying, "No thanks, I hate that. Get it away from me." And I gave up 63 days clean. But I went to a meeting the next day, and I told on myself, and my sponsor complimented me and said, "It's time to start working the steps." This time, though, he told me to read out of the basic text, because that's all the literature we had. We had a handful of IPs and a basic text, and a little white book. He said, read out of the basic text on the first step, and go around and ask everybody you see in these rooms, did they work a first step, and how did they work that step? This is how it was done. This is what my sponsor told me. So that's what I did. And then I went home and I wrote down what it meant to me, hearing it from all these other people. I did the same with the second. I did the same with the third, eventually. Because if you remember, I said, no, I'm not willing to ask. You know, I made a decision, but I never asked. I never went through with the decision for the longest time. One thing I learned about these steps is, if you don't work them, they're going to work you. Sit on a step long enough, And it will drive you nuts to the point to where you'll have two choices. Use or kill yourself. Oh, no, wait. There's a third one. Call your sponsor and work a step. Wow. Never dawned on me. As I'm sitting in it, I had gotten to the point to where I was not even going to meetings because I was embarrassed that he might ask me again. Well, I finally decided to start praying, to start asking for help. And I always wanted to work a fourth and fifth step because, again, I was told back then, people who don't will relapse. That's how it was put. If you don't work a fifth step, you're going to relapse. It wasn't maybe. So, as soon as I managed to finally ask, I started writing. I had a steno book. I was told the way to do it was to write down every name, every business, everything I've come in contact with, every person I've come in contact with, at the top of each page of that book. And go back to the beginning of that book and write down all the good and bad things you've done to them. One page after another. Until you've filled the book up, theoretically, you know, gone through every name. When I was just about done with it, I'd been keeping it in my car at the time, because by now, I had become back into the social acceptability. I had a job, and I got my wife and kids back, and I looked like Joe Normal. Which, if anyone who knows me knows that I am far from being normal. I ended up having my mother-in-law at the time found the book. Read her name, edited it, and passed it around to everyone. Whose name was in that tablet? Not a good way to do your first four step. But instead of killing her, I called my sponsor. And I'm serious. I mean, I had it all figured out. She was dead, burning, screaming out the window, help me, help me. I called my sponsor, and he insisted I come by immediately to do a fifth step. He stopped his life because that's what we do. Not that that's what we have to do every time, but there are times that this happens. My sponsor's name is Bob Wolf. I'm allowed to say his whole name because anonymity doesn't involve keeping last names from recovering addicts. It has to do with press, radio, and film. We used to give last names. I don't know when it happened, but we stopped. My last name is Smith. A little easier to give out. Yes, sure it is. No, but I also learned anonymity is another half of I'm a lousy poster child for this program. So for that reason, I don't want people to think that this is how you end up when you go to these rooms, because it's not always a good example, me. So, but back to Bob. Me and Bob became friends, not during the step work time. During the step work time, it was very serious. And I hated him, and I liked him, and I tolerated him, and I hated him again. And it was tough, and it was hard, and it was, I had no choice. I knew if I didn't, I was going to die. I was that close the first time. I succeeded at dying, all that dumb shit that we did. I did not want to go back. I had no other choices. Once we got through him the first time, then a friendship developed only because we have a lot in common, he and I. And I found that out when I shared my fifth step. Not that it dawned on me right away, because I was so self-absorbed still. I'm still a sick little dope fiend addict. All I knew was me. The whole world still revolved around me, because I hadn't done six and seven yet. You know, but when I got to that critical point in my fifth step, to where I didn't know what to do because I was sharing the deep secret, damn if he didn't come up with a similar story. You know, this is what this shit's about. You know, and not that your sponsor's going to have a similar story. That isn't what it's about. He never judged me until after we got to know each other and become friends. Then we started judging each other like friends. But he never judged me as an addict negatively. He pushed me. My sponsor had about 2.5 years or so more than I did clean when I first met him. And 5 years ago, he changed his clean date. Hence the two-way street. Really became apparent. Because he called every one of his sponsees and fired himself. Because of the way he went back out. Now, he went back out for a minute. I've shared this with a handful of people. You know, that not giving him an excuse, but life on life's terms is not always easy. And like Lynn was saying, and like a lot of people, you know, his drug of choice was opiates. He went and he got hurt. He broke his neck on a job. He was a boilermaker, or was. And they found out that he needed bypass surgery. He's already need surgery on the neck, and he's already taking opiates. Talk about waking up your disease. It took away his identity because he couldn't go to work anymore, or part of his identity. Because as men, for some unknown stupid reason, a major part of our identity is what we do for a living. I don't know why. Social upbringing, who knows, environmental torture. But that compounded with his son overdosed and died in his arms a month after he was released from the hospital. Too much, too fast. I personally question why he changed his date, because he never really picked up, sort of. He was taking the medicine as prescribed, and his mind, started producing more pain because of his son dying like he did. And losing his job, and all this, as his disease started to really, really beat him up and create pain. And he was taking more than what was prescribed. And then he went to a doctor, or called his doctor, because it was kind of an open-end script anyway, fresh out of the hospital like he was. And his doctor wasn't available, and he found another doctor in a phone book, and he was sitting in that doctor's office, and they got his hand on a script, and he walked out the door, and he just couldn't go to the pharmacy with it. Instead, he went to a meeting and changed his clean date. Some of us say, you could, that's his call anyway. It's his program. You know. But he got really, really bad. And lucky for me, I have a very, very large support group because I do travel for a living. I have people all over the country, you know, as well as all over Pennsylvania and, you know, Laurel Mountain Highlands. I know hundreds of people everywhere. You know, I when I was in Michigan a year ago, I had to get another phone because I filled a phone book. I didn't even know you could on one of them things. But I just ran out of room because I got too many people. So I bought another phone. You know, and like I said, lucky for me that was there because I learned to really use a support group, because every time I would call my sponsor, I felt as though I was sponsoring him. I even got a temporary sponsor. And that's exactly what he was. Because Jason knew eventually Bob's going to get his head out of his ass and turn back into Bob. And I'm going to go back to having him as a sponsor. But I needed somebody to bounce my tragedy off of. So I found somebody else temporarily. Now, I don't. I personally don't need a sponsor like I did in the beginning. I really don't. You know, not that I don't use them, but, you know, I do call my sponsor, not every day, not every week, but I guarantee the least I'll call him is once a month. And that's usually because life is just going too good to where I'm just not even thinking about calling him. And then he'll call me, because that's what friends do. He's never called me as a sponsor and said, "Hey, you haven't called me for a while, are you using?" or anything like that. No, that isn't what sponsors do. That's another thing I was taught early on. As a sponsor, because I sponsor a lot of people, I have something you don't. You don't have anything that I want, because I've already been there. So you need to chase me. You need to follow me. You need to walk like I do. You need to talk like I do. Whatever. Imitate what I'm doing. You'll catch on to how this shit works. That's how it was taught to me. That's what I did. I hung around people like Dennis, which is my grand sponsor. Dennis Haggerty is probably most everyone's here grand or grand, great or great, great sponsor. I can almost guarantee it. He is in your sponsor pool, because, or sponsor family. The man's been around 29 years, you know? No, not yet.
Okay.
Now, Aggie, his wife, just celebrated 30. He celebrates next June 28th. He'll have 30. 29 years he just celebrated. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He was also another one I would bounce stuff off of. It's part of it. It's just one big family. You know, I was given a sponsee, and it's about 10 years ago, that was taking antidepressants and mood and psych meds and a whole bunch of this stuff. You know, and I later found out why, because I got to see him when he didn't take them. Understandably. People need these things. There is a legitimate reason for it. You know, not always, but see, I was taught no mood or mind-altering substance, period. And when he asked me to be a sponsor, I would be honored. This is the response. Then I found out that he's on all these meds. And I called my sponsor. What the hell am I supposed to do with this guy? I didn't believe he was clean. My sponsor told me, "You need to call so-and-so, someone I respected highly." And that person told me, "Guess who's on antidepressants?" I would have never guessed. But without him, he had led a miserable life for the first 8-10 years of recovery. And he started taking them. And that's when I got to know him. And he's like this happy guy and nice to be around. And so there are those that need him. It was also told to me, give this program a chance first before you go diving into the softer, easier ways. And I bring that up because a year and a half ago, life on life's terms got in my way, and I had experienced a thing called anxiety, which I thought was just an over-dramatization on the part of most girls, and just overreacting. And some guys, who I just thought were a little sissified, well, this anxiety got to the point to where I had a stroke on an airplane and almost died. So I went to a doctor in a panic. My family doctor. And said, "What? I can't deal with this. What am I supposed to do? You know, I need some kind of antidepressant, anti-anxiety medicine." Now, I already knew this about my doctor, but his response was, "Have you talked this over with your sponsor yet?" My family doctor, as close as I can figure, has about 2-3 years more than me. He won't quite break his anonymity completely. But he just knows too damn much. You know? You can't pass a recovering addict in front of another recovering addict without us knowing. Just like I could drive through Pittsburgh and know which person to talk to on a street corner to cop from. You didn't need a sign. I didn't need to yell out the window and ask. I knew which one of you guys had it. And I know which one of you guys have it on the job. I know which one of you guys have recovery on the job. I know which one of you in a high-rise building in downtown Pittsburgh, as I get on an elevator and I'm looking, and I'll say little things like, "Keep coming back. It works." And I find one of us in a crowd. It's great. I love it. Especially down Gem Group or Weaver or whatever the hell it's called. No. But I have one sponsee right now that is driving me nuts, because he's chasing property and prestige as his cure for this disease. And been there, done that. That's what the anxiety was all about a year and a half ago, was when I realized almost all of my property and prestige that I acquired was spent by someone else. And that person had vanished with an internet friend. It happens. Welcome to reality. Divorces happen. Babies happen. Repossessions. Losing jobs. All this stuff. Bailing children out of jail or not bailing children out of jail. Both have happened. You know, all that. This is life. It's normal. If you want to call it that, I don't like the word. I've always said normal is nothing more than a setting on a washing machine. But to me, sometimes it's something I can handle. They say God doesn't give you anything you can't handle. Well, He has a lot higher expectations of me than I do. You know. But after that heart attack and after the stroke on the plane, and sitting in Minnesota trying to find a way to kill myself, and going through all this insanity in my own head, I didn't go use. I got on the phone and I called my sponsor. I got on the phone and I called someone else in my support group. I got on my phone and I called the sponsee that I just referenced. Damn if that kid didn't tell me, "Well, it's about 6 o'clock. There should be a meeting coming up out there, isn't there?" Damn, now why didn't I think of that? Go to a meeting. You know, sponsorship, it's a two-way street. It really is. That's all it took was that kid to tell me, hey, there's a meeting, isn't there? It got me to get up out of that damn apartment and go out and talk to other people and find people with smiles on their faces. You know, it's a tough disease. It really is. Oh, that breeze feels so damn good. Oh, my God. You know, I'm going to close with a question that I had asked at about a year clean. And I've been asking it again as of late. If they came up with a cure for this disease, doesn't matter what the cure is, it's permanent. You will not be an addict anymore. Would you take that cure and why? And my answer to that question is, I would take that cure. Not that I would stop going to the rooms. They got open meetings for people. I would continue to call recovering addicts. This is a major part of my life that I would not want to lose the benefits of recovery. The only thing it would take away is that death threat. It's always there. It wants to kill me. It never gives me a day off. That's why I would take it. But I get a daily reprieve from it. Or a 1 minute reprieve when I'm on the phone talking to you. Or you call me. And I forget. Just long enough, I forget that the disease is fucking with me right now. That's all it takes sometimes. Distract me from it. Long enough that I forget. And then I go and I do something else. Or I go to a meeting. Or I continue to talk to you for an hour and a half. You know, but sponsorship is something that is a necessity. Some people say everything's a suggestion. I'll tell you the way it was said before. Don't use, get a sponsor, work the steps, or die. That's how it was said. Nobody ever said, I suggest. It was said. Take it or leave it. It worked for a lot of years. With that, I'm done. Thanks.